Today's program is brought to you by S. Wallace Edwards & Sons, third-generation cure masters producing the country's best dry-cured and aged hams, bacon, and sausage. For more information, visit edwardsvaham.com.
I'm Mike Kalameko from Food Talk. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hey, and welcome to the Food Scene on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. I'm your host, Michael Harlan Turkel. I'm drinking too early in the day.
Now I'm really worried about you getting my name correct.
No. Why don't you say your own name? Why don't you introduce yourself to the listeners?
Sure. Because you're scared, too. You seem a little intimidated.
There's a lot
actually of
C's, a lot of double letters.
It goes deep in the Italian. Yeah, I know. Yeah. Louis Di Beccari.
Better known.
Or Louis Di Beccari, depending. I mean, my mom would want me to say Louis, but everyone else would recognize
Greater Beantown knows you as the unofficial mayor of Boston, Louis Di Beccari. Welcome to the show. Straight off the Boston Marathon at that, which happened yesterday, Patriots Day.
Yeah, and
I kind of want to start with that because we were chatting about how important it is to Boston now. I mean, it's always been important, but how it's changed, obviously, over the last few years and, you know, what the marathon means to that city.
Yeah, the marathon has always been one of the more epic sort of days and events in Boston. It's something that had a true identity with the city. And it went from being something that I think was fun that you went to something that now you almost feel is mandatory that you attend, you know, and in a very good way. And where maybe like the decibel of how hard you cheered for someone reached like an 8 sometimes, it's just tens across the board now. And where maybe it was you'd take breaks and you'd go wander off and then come back, like people just stay fixated in their spot and they cheer for every single person that goes by as if every person that goes by is like Big Poppy. We have that sort of camaraderie with all the runners, and it's a very special event when you think about it, because there's no spring training for it, you know. There's athletes from all around the world, but it's not the Olympics. You can't attach yourself to the runners in the same way you do the athletes that play for the Celtics, the Boston Bruins, the Patriots, the Red Sox. But for that one day, they are your favorite athletes in the city, and it trumps everything.
Yeah, and Tavern Road.
Something very special about that.
Yeah, your restaurant, I think it has a really similar identity in that sense, where it has that global, you know, perspective on food, but also on camaraderie. You know, you have a lot of people after the race come over to, you know, your restaurant in Fort Point and use that as a place of celebration.
Yeah, for me, I mean, that was. I thought about this yesterday. I really, really reflected back on the last 2 years of Tavern Road, and I ask myself questions all the time. And one of the questions I asked myself was why? Why did you open a restaurant? Why did you feel compelled to do something like this? It certainly isn't for the lifestyle, you know. But when all your friends there sort of coming in from out of town, LA or wherever, and they're running in the marathon, all your friends that are local and they're running in the marathon, but their people, their families are coming in from all around, and they all congregate at your restaurant afterwards, it answers the question, why did I do this? You know, this is what it's about. It's about friends and family all having a place to go to, you know, that meeting place, that third place where they can celebrate that accomplishment, and you want to celebrate it with them, but you get to feed them also.
Yeah.
And that might just be my Italian gene kicking in. I don't know. But
yeah. I mean, it's funny, you know, having gone to college, you really couldn't cook and you took that for granted. Your family's like scratch cooking.
Yeah. I don't even know why I went to college, to be honest with you. I think it was mostly just to have that phase of my life where I experimented with drugs and massive amounts of alcohol. But once I got through that, I realized that I was not college material at all.
But at least during that, you learned how to perfect the calzone.
The one good thing that came from going to the college I went to, and it had the worst cafeteria in food I've ever experienced anywhere. And it would be wrong for me to say what college that is, so I'll just say its initials are Fitchburg State. And while there, I got to tell you, I had to cook just for survival. I just needed to get myself out of that program they had. And I called home and I was like, Ma, how do you make the meatballs? How do you make that gravy? And I called my aunts and be like, how do you cook a turkey or whatever it was. And then I started sort of picking up some books and just sort of flipping through the pages, and I found some inspiration. And I found inspiration through, more than anything, not really the way the food was coming out, because if I was to go back and eat that food now, I'd probably be like, God, you really sucked at this. But my friends loved it. You know, I mean, they were getting a home-cooked meal, which was something that was very, very rare at a state college. And just because of the way they made me feel when I would do that for them, it made me feel good. And I wanted to go off and do that more and more and more. And I think that's where I fell in love with hospitality, maybe even more so than food.
I mean, you went away to culinary school to get a formal education, but then you ended up back in Boston again, you know, working at, what is that, the season at the Millennial Boston Hotel.
Seasons, I got there probably, one generation too late. But when I arrived at culinary school, I did a lot of research on, where I wanted to work and what kind of path I wanted to start to pay for myself. And Seasons Restaurant seemed to be the place in Boston where all the top chefs came out of, like a farm system. Like, they all just sort of grew out of this. It was like the Notre Dame of culinary.
Oh, see, yeah. I thought you were going to go Lowell or Pawtucket. Come on. It's Red Sox season.
I'm part of the 80s generation, yeah. So Notre Dame was ruled back then. And when I thought about following their footsteps, I knew I had to go through Seasons in order to do that. You know, some of the biggest names in Boston and Boston culinary scene right now came through Seasons at the Bostonian Hotel.
Lydia Shire, Jasper White,
sure. Yeah,
Jody Adams,
all of them. Yeah. Yeah. At some point or another, they touched those stoves. You know, I wanted to do the same thing. And then, they all went off and opened up their own restaurants. And then their sous chefs went off and opened other restaurants. And, the rest is history. Boston became like this dynamic, booming culinary scene, nationally recognized for its chefs and its restaurants. And it's probably right now at its peak,
Well, let's talk about the second floor of a townhouse and how that transformed your career.
All right. First off, L'Espalier probably should have never been a restaurant. The fact that it was, and it was for such a long period of time, is sort of a testament to how much talent went through there that cared about the space and about the restaurant and how charming it was. And it still felt like you were in someone's home the whole time you were there, but in like 1890. it was amazing. And the food we did out of there was, I think, probably some of the best that Boston's ever seen. I thought we had some of the most amazing crews I ever worked with there. And when you think about, the lifespan of a restaurant, some last 5 years. And some have a great 5-year run, but the last 5 years, some last 10 years. And they have great decade-long run in the last 10 years, And L'Espalier has been going at it for over 30 years. And if you look at that around the country, like, who has been either number one, two, or three in their city for 30 freaking years. I mean, that's kind of an amazing accomplishment.
I mean, up until
last, and I was a very small part of that, but just to even sort of have your name be on that roster somewhere.
Right, I think that's what Boston is. Boston's love legacy.
Yeah.
And up until, I think, last year, when Hammersley's closed, Gordon had, I think, 26 years under his belt. And you look at Lydio and, Lockober, and though it went through many different chefs, that had, almost, 100 years under his belt. I mean, there are some really ingrained restaurants in that city.
Right, and pioneers. You're talking about pioneers. You're talking about people that, started it all, really, in a lot of ways, in that city, and broke Boston free of its of cliches. Like being a baked bean town, and all this other crap that it never really was, and kind of got a bad rap for. And these guys came along and said, no, not at all. We do real food here, and here it is. And Boston started to get national acclaim when those guys kind of put their feet down and said, nope. We're going to change things here.
After 12 years at the L'Espalier, and with that team, you went traveling a little bit. Again, drawn back to Boston. You can't take the Boston out of, the Linfield boy.
No, it's hard. And, Linfield itself, it's hard to get out of. Most people don't realize this exactly, but we all know if we're there, if we're from there, that Linfield is the center of the universe. And you don't realize that till you get outside of Linfield and you realize how many places Linfield touches. Like, I can't walk into a room. There's probably someone here at Roberta's eating pizza right now that's from Linfield.
Every time I see Fluff on the shelves, even though that's Lynn, it's close enough. traveling the world, bringing those things back to Boston, you know, you got to start your career. You got to start this vision of a restaurant, and you were consulting for some. But what really kind of, you know, helped you make your name there are Chef Louis nights.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, those were wild. I miss those a lot, actually. I mean, I'm constantly reminding myself that I have to bring these things back. They were Boston's first ever pop-up, I guess, and I'm not a huge fan of the idea of the pop-up, but or the name the pop-up. It's just kind of silly, isn't it?
Kind of pervy.
When you say it,
yeah.
When you hear yourself saying it, you're like, I feel really silly saying this. It was more of an interactive dining experience, you know? Sure, it wasn't in a traditional restaurant spot for what we were doing, but the idea was you went to a website, you voted for a theme and ingredients. We didn't find out what you voted for until the day of the event. And then myself and six other chefs would run around the city like zoo animals, just trying to find all the ingredients and put the theme and the ingredients together. And we had, you know, like 8 hours to do it. And people actually paid money for tickets to this thing, and they'd come to it. And we put out like 5-6 courses of some really bomb ass cool food, sometimes using like Pop Rocks, you know. And it really all depended on sort of what the theme was. And sometimes the theme was, you know, something orange, which meant I just had to go to the grocery store and find things that were orange and like make the whole meal in some way kind of reflect that theme. Sometimes it was, you know, anything from aisle 12. I mean, what the fuck? That could have been the magazine aisle.
Like, yeah.
Who knows? You know, by the time we got to the store, who even knows what's in aisle 12? And the idea was really fun. And I think that you've seen sort of that idea be used in a lot of reality television now. I think that you know, Top Chef uses like a lot of those similar kind of scenarios for like their little segments of what they do also, because it's awesome. It's fun. It's super entertaining. It's really challenging. And it's I think the chef gets as much out of it as the audience does. You know, they're both kind of looking at this challenge going, what the hell are we going to do?
Yeah. You know? But even more so, you're engaging the community. You know, you're letting them vote on ingredients, on themes, interact in a way that a lot of some of the older Boston restaurants, you know, never deviated from.
That's what made it different. That's what kind of separated it. It had its identity because you could interact with it. You could vote for the theme and ingredients. You played a role. And then you come to the dinner, and then we tell you what we did with the ingredients you voted for and how we rolled it into the theme that you voted for. So you became a part of the show. And then, you know, by the end of it, just before we had opened Tavern Road, we had introduced a television production aspect of it where I actually had more people on payroll producing real-time YouTube videos where you could see the strategy session in the morning, you know, the preparation, the shopping, all the execution happening during the day. Because I really like that was the part that we were missing in the beginning, was you came to the event, you ate the food, but you couldn't really see the action. Everyone wants to see it. So we found a way to show it to them. But it was tough. It was a really hard model to pull off. And we were just starting to get kind of our feet under us with it. And then, you know, 343 Congress Street came along, and there was a space available, and it was in the artist community. And that kind of pulled at my heartstrings a little bit, and it got me going a little bit. And I said, yeah, I want to open a restaurant here. And we signed a lease, and that sort of ended everything else for the last 2 years. Yeah.
Well, we're going to take a quick break on that and come back with lots of action. Tavern Road, Crate, Boston. You've been listening to The Food Scene on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. We'll be right back.
Awesome.
This is Intrigue by Obesity. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. The following program is brought to you by S. Wallace Edwards & Sons. Edwards Suriano hams are aged to perfection for no less than 400 days and hickory smoked to achieve a deep mahogany color. the Edwards name is well known for its world-class aged and cured meats. Their exclusive curing and aging recipe produces a unique flavor profile that enhances the quality characteristics of Berkshire pork. Optimum amounts of pure white fat marbling contribute to a flavor that's a delicate, perfect balance between sweet and salty. For more information, visit edwardsvaham.com.
Hey, and welcome back to The Food Scene on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. I'm your host, Michael Harlan Turkel, here again with Louis DiBucari of Tavern Road. Now,
this is awesome, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
I can't believe we're just sitting here just eating, watching people eat pizza on a patio. But this whole idea of the show is amazing.
Yeah, yeah. It's
I don't know if I would have like taken a one-day trip to New York for anyone but you. I mean, I'm serious
thank
when
you.
I say that.
Yeah.
I mean, you have a lot of ties to Boston. You have a lot of roots in Boston.
Yeah.
And like you and I don't know if you realize this, we have 35 mutual Facebook friends. So you and I are practically bros.
Yeah, exactly. I like that 35, I feel like, is that threshold of bro on Facebook. But I feel that too, just because Jamie Bissonnette's been on the show. But he was also on the show because I've known that guy for a decade. And when you work in the industry and, you know, cook with these guys, you're brethren instantly. And, you know, that bloodline's never lost.
Cook with him. I think I'm feeding his cats tonight.
Yeah. As long as you're not cooking his cats, even though I know they're big ass.
I kind of like
them. Yeah, 30 pound. And I apologize, Jamie, if your cats go missing after today's show. But I want to talk about Tavern Road and Create Boston at the same time, because they were very simultaneous. Create Boston actually started before Tavern Road, but they both melded this idea of having chefs and the art community, you know, converse.
Right. Yeah, Create started. It started 6 years before I actually launched it. That's when I kind of gave birth in my head. And I carried around with me for that many years, trying to figure out the timing on how to roll it out and, you know, just kind of having the balls to roll it out. I don't know anything really about the artist community at the time. You know, I knew people in the artist community a little bit, but what do I know about throwing an art show? I'm not a curator, you know, but I couldn't get the thought out of my mind of artists and chefs collaborating together and creating installations. And the idea of this being like an event, like a festival with bartenders and music and different types of like little pockets of different things going on all over the place, and having it be like an all-day thing on a Sunday you could go and just like hang out at. And the more it started developing in my head, the more I realized that I needed to take it back to its beginning, its roots of artists and chefs, and just start it. You know, just try to get the thing going and then have a long-term plan for it. So in the first year that we did it, you know, we had six artists, we had six chefs, and I didn't know what to expect. And we sold 150 tickets, which was fine. It was a very small venue. I don't think we could have done any more people if we tried. And what I was really shocked by was how amazing and wild the installations were. When chefs operate with one side of their brain and artists work with a similar side of their brain, but still a little bit different. You know, they're kind of off kilter. They're not exactly the same culinary forces. But when you take those two people that think sort of like-mindedly but differently, and you put them together and you ask them to create something together, they start thinking about their art differently, and the chef starts thinking about their food a little bit differently in order to conform to the other person's style of medium. And what we realized is that there's no ceiling on this thing. It can get as wild as we want it to get, because these guys are ready to push envelopes.
Let's
they want to bring their A game, and Create has turned into one of the more fascinating events I've ever been to.
I mean, just hearing about some of the collaborations in the past, it was the one with the woodworkers, and they built this whole, literally, like, truck.
The individuals are legendary in Boston for their woodworking. You know, there's a lot of people that work with wood and reclaim wood, and you can buy, like, picture frames and furniture and, you know, candle holders, stuff like that, all these things. And those things are all great. They're all important. I have some of that stuff in my house. But these guys create theater. They take reclaimed wood, and they create friggin' theater. They put shows on. They created this one installation where they had like these alien guys that came down from space, and all the and like one's like the chef and one's the maitre d'. They've basically taken over a cafe, killed all the humans, like very Twilight Zone-esque, you know what I'm talking about? And they started serving the humans as food, like part of like they were the menu. And they called it Lovesick Cafe. Like that's the brand. And in the first year, they did Lovesick Cafe, and they had, I paired them with Jason Cheek, who was the sous chef at Toro at the time, and Jason did a pate or a terrine full of, like, It was chock full of like livers and kidneys and hearts and tongue. And I was like, yeah, exactly. Bingo. You nailed it. You know, that's exactly what that works perfectly with the with what the individuals do. And, you know, the next year they did a food truck. We had Alex Crabb from Asta on there, and he was doing like popcorn out of the cotton candy out of the food truck, but on like asparagus sticks, so you could eat the whole thing. And it was very cool the way they just sort of all collaborate and create different installations. And every single time it's something very, very different. And there's always six artists and there's always six chefs. But in year three, we were able to bring in six bartenders also, and they joined the collaboration. And this year, finally, in year four, we're going to have two of the better live music bands you can have in Boston with Bo Pope and Tiger Manuel. And two of the hottest bands in Boston right now performing. And we're sort of getting very close to having a festival here.
Yeah.
Which was not really the game plan. But, I mean, you got to let it just grow organically and take on a life of its own and just try to hold it, you know?
Yeah. It's such an amazing thing how things develop like that. Because in your, you know, childhood, you had an uncle who was a big influence on your life. A master sculptor at that.
Yeah.
Audio. Tell me about him and his brother-in-law, Angelo.
Audio and Angelo were sort of the inspirations behind a lot of what you see at Tavern Road visually. When we found our location in Four Point, and if you don't know this, well, you probably know this, but a lot of listeners might not. Four Point in Boston is New England's oldest and largest artist community. And it's also one of the largest redevelopment projects in Boston history. And what you're seeing is a period right now where the artists are sort of being displaced and the Innovation District is sort of coming in. And in a way, it's a very good thing that the area is being developed, and in a way, it's sort of a very sad thing that the city of Boston hasn't really made any plans to foster artists back into the community in some way. And in a lot of ways, that's what Create's mission statement was from day one. It was to foster artists back into the community because we realized what was happening in the artist communities. And with Tavern Road, we decided we had an opportunity to plant our feet in the ground right in the middle of Four Point and say, this is still the artist community. That's the DNA of this area. That's the integrity of this area. This is how this area was born and built. And we want, as long as we're here, whether it's 10 years or 20 years, we want to represent that. And so we connected the dots between my family's history with my uncles that were sculptors and our location in Four Point. And the way we did that was not just with a 30-foot by 6-foot mural showing lots of their artwork, which was inspired by the Project Super Friends, which is a group of graffiti artists that also do Create, but also by naming the restaurant Tavern Road, because that's where my uncle's studio was. It was on Tavern Road over near the MFA. So we felt that this storyline connected a lot of dots between our family's history and the artist community and being having a restaurant at Four Point. And our intention is to keep our feet planted there and constantly scream, hey, this is not the Innovation District.
Yeah.
This is the artist community, and it always will be. And no matter how many businesses you bring in here, you know, we're always going to remember who built it.
And this is family, too. I mean, you look at the menu itself at Tavern Road, and it harkens back to, I'm sure, some of those Sunday suppers.
Yeah.
You know, for meatballs, obviously there's a little more of a global take on some of the
dishes. Especially right now.
Yeah.
We're doing something pretty wild in there. I don't know if they told you about this.
No, please do.
All right. We're doing what we're billing as a concept takeover. So for the month of April, I burned the Tavern Road menu. We're not doing it at all. And we're doing an entire small plate street food menu, which is similar to what we do at lunch, but extended by about 25 to 30 items. And all small plates from globally inspired from all over the world. And a lot of it is reflective of my travels. I'm pretty well traveled. I've been to a lot of places, seen a lot of things, and eaten a lot of food. And when we opened the street food counter during the day as for lunch, you know, when we first opened the restaurant, it never really developed into what I wanted it to. It just kind of automatically became a sandwich shop because that's what people want to grab and go. They just want to take, I mean, you're at Four Point in Boston. And then I started thinking about it more and more, and I wondered how it would function as an independent restaurant space. And I started to write that out on paper. And the more I contributed to it, you know, with my imagination, the more I wanted to see it become a reality. And then I just sort of picked April and said, fuck it. Let's do something wild. Let's just burn this goddamn menu and start over and see what happens. And we can do it for 30 days as a just a concept takeover and see how people respond to it.
So no more chickpea bites.
No, they're still there. I found a way to keep them on.
Yeah, people I got scared there for a
second. They would have picketed and outside the restaurant with signs. I mean, it would have been like craziness out there. But the idea was to bring that street food feeling into the restaurant. So we even got an artist to come in, my friend Marcus, and he hung street art all around the restaurant. And we're looking to maybe keep it going for another month or so and keep developing it and see what different phases we can introduce and how we can kind of reconcept what we're doing a little bit more into more of a street food vibe. It wasn't really the plan going into it, but the response we've been getting from the staff and from our customer base has been so overwhelmingly positive, and people are so excited about it that it's hard to ignore that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Street food is hot. And you go back to Create, you have Alex Hull of My Kitchen.
Yeah.
You know, working. And look at that phenomenon.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And we're looking for more of that with Create. We're looking for more of those chefs that are, Create is not for, we mentioned Jamie earlier. It's really not for him or for Ken Oranger or for Barbara Lynch or any of these people. They're so established. It's for their sous chefs. We want the rising stars. We want the next generation. We want to be the ones to introduce you to the next generation of great chefs in Boston, the people that are going to define the city of Boston for the next 10 years, 15 years. We want you to get your first glimpse of them through Create. And similarly with the artists.
So what artists, chefs, and bartenders are on the lineup for this here?
So we're going to have, you said Alex from Meme. We're also looking at, I'm going to pull my phone out.
Well, Jason Cheek is back, but this time it's
every single time. Alex Crabb does it just about every year. And we try to create variety and have new chefs, but they every year they do it, they call and say, can we do it again? So it's hard to sort of say no to them. And for bartenders, we've got Dan Lynch, Randuan, who is just like bartender of the world, I don't know, mm-hmm. or something like that. He was on the cover of GQ. He's all over the place. Tenzin from Trade, Sabrina from Deep Ellum, Tyler Wang from Audubon, Vic from Sarma, like one of the hottest restaurants Somerville's ever seen.
Yeah.
And then we have, Kenji, who's one of the top artists in Boston right now, graffiti artist. Guy worked on our mural at our restaurant also. My boy Marcus, Natasha Mustache, a photographer in Boston. Kevin Stanton, Mo Pope, who's doubles as he does music. He's going to be performing, and he's also going to be an artist there too. He's a painter, and his work is like off the chain. It's unbelievable. Alex Sayas from Puritan and Company, Renee Conley, the pastry chef at Cafe Art Science. Yeah, that's it, man. That's the lineup.
You know what's amazing about hearing those fantastic people attending and participating in this event is you have no idea what's going to happen. Like, you have no idea what this collaboration between the artists and the chefs and the bartenders are going to be until you show up, and that's almost the most exciting thing.
I get to be a participant in that way. I don't really know. They can tell me what's going to be like, but I don't totally know what's going to be like, and I don't dictate any of how it's going to go down. I don't want to stifle anyone's creativity. I tell them, I'm here to enable you. I'm an enabler. Tell me what you want. I'm going to make it happen for you. That's it. I'll spend the money. I'll break the rules. I'll lie to the venue. I'll do whatever it takes to make sure that you're going to, I hope the venue is listening to this, but I'll make sure that you're, whatever you want to happen and whatever message you're trying to send, you'll be able to do it.
Do they call you the Chef's Menino? I feel like they should. I miss that mumble so much.
There's only one, man.
Yeah. It's happening Sunday, June 7th from 2 to 6 p.m. at the Fairmount Battery Wharf.
And that's actually just the Battery Wharf.
Just the
Battery. We get a lot of trouble if you say Fairmount.
Crossing that out. Yeah.
So this is taped, right?
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, excellent. Monday, May 4th, tickets go on sale. Get them now. How big is the venue this time? It ain't 150 tickets.
We did 450 last year. We're looking to do around the same amount. That's a nice crowd for that space. It's kind of right on the water. And we mix it as an indoor-outdoor space. Last year, we had like a body painter outside also. It was a beautiful day. People took a walk down on the Harbor Walk, put their feet in the water, came back up, had some more food, checked out some more art. This year, you'll be able to listen to live music also. It's the only event that I know of, and I could be wrong, where it appeals to every sense. There's a beverage component. There's a food component. There's music. and his art. So it hits all your senses. It's quite the melting pot.
And it's create-boston.com, correct?
Correct.
Now get your tickets before it turns into a full-blown festival. And as always...
Or maybe we'll do one here. You never know.
Sounds great. Let's travel this thing. Let's do it right in the studio for a food scene next year. Have as many artist chefs. Just half an hour of pure collaboration.
We might have to knock down one or two or all four of these walls. But yeah,
we're fine with that. We need more space anyway. And as always, Boston strong. You've been listening to The Food Scene on heritageradionetwork.org. I'm your host, Michael Harlan Turkel. Hoping to have you back here next Tuesday at 3. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us with questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.